Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilda for Live and Joy and Tea.
We've got a brand new exciting episode for you. Please welcome your hosts, Elfie Czerny and Dominic Godad.
Thank you very much, Ken, and welcome back, everyone. We're very excited to be finally in California, as you already know. We are in San Diego, sitting here with Alan Gwick today. Hello, Alan, and thank
Hi.
You so much for having us.
It is such a privilege to have you guys here today.
Thank you. And today we wanted to start with a little story of our journey, because a lot of people ask us again and again how we take decisions. So how do we decide where to go next? We're happy to give a little answer to that and then to further explore this topic with Alan today.
How do you know when you know? That's the title of one of the books that Alan Quick wrote, and it inspired us to think more of how do we decide when we're on the road. And one of the things that we highly appreciate doing is looking at what works and what's worked in the past, and also when we drive, talk about that and then decide with that in our minds. And another thing is to really over and over and over again talk about what we want and talk about how we would like to have our near future, like tomorrow, for example, or the day after tomorrow. And with this also, often while driving, making lists of what differences that will make and kind of how we would notice that we are on our way to our preferred future. The decisions mostly come with talking, and suddenly we know. And that's the question, how do we know when we know?
And this is one of the exciting things for us, not having a plan, but thinking in ideas, in preferred futures, and to explore those preferred futures and amplify what works towards it, to be adventurous discoverers that explore their way. And very often we thought we were so much looking forward to come to this or that place, and then we felt like, oh no, this is not the right place to be right now, and we decided to go. And other times we came to places and were really surprised that we loved it that much, like for instance Las Vegas. I could not have imagined to celebrate Christmas in Las Vegas, and we had just an awesome time there. And I told Dominic, no, I want to celebrate Christmas in California. Well, it came differently, and it was the perfect place to be, the perfect time to be and to celebrate with friends on a place where it felt good to be.
And the perfect place to be was at the SFBTA conference in Boulder when we met Alan Quick, and she said, well, when you're in San Diego, come by. And here we are. And we had a very lovely evening just the other day with her husband. We ate and talked about solution focus, talked about all the work that she did and all the books she wrote. Ellen is a licensed psychologist. She works on one hand as a therapist and on the other hand as a coach, life coaching as a topic. And she has written many, many books. One, Doing What Works in Brief Therapy, already came out in 1996. Then there is a book about solution-focused anxiety management. There's a book about core competencies in solution-focused and strategic therapies, highlighting her connections between the MRI, strategic therapy, and solution focus. And we would love to talk about that. And of course, the book that we just now mentioned, How Do You Know When You Know? So hello, Ellen. Thank you very much for having us here.
Hi. It's wonderful to have you here today.
Thank you. Ellen, what fascinates you with solution focus?
When you look at people and situations through a solution-focused lens, you see that there are always times when the problem, no matter how huge or insurmountable it might seem at first sight, there are times when that problem isn't, when it's a non-issue, when people use strengths and skills that are already in their repertoires, and the problem isn't a problem. And for me, that's so amazing. And as a therapist, I have the opportunity to see that every day. And it's one of the things that fascinated me about solution focus when I first learned it, and it continues to fascinate me now.
How beautiful. And it's fascinating you for quite some Thursdays, right?
For more years than I care to admit. We'll put it that way.
So you mentioned several times, actually, how passionate you are in working in one-to-one settings with people and how passionate you are about being a therapist. What else makes you so passionate about that?
I think it's seeing people change, seeing the amazing resilience and strength that they have in incredibly difficult situations, the behaviors that on one level are simple, everyday things, charging your phone, driving safely, getting up to change your baby's diaper. People keep going and they do that, and it's amazing.
You just recently in 2018 gave a TED talk on solution focus and paying attention to details, and what I so much loved about it is the metaphors you used and also the way you just also right now describe this paying attention to these little details that are, how you put it, ordinary but then are extraordinary.
Yes, things that on one level are just ordinary things and at the same time are truly extraordinary.
So how do you discover the extraordinary in your work with people?
Well, like many therapists, I start when I meet with someone by asking what their best hopes are from our conversation, and we talk about that for a while, and then I say, may I ask you a scaling question? And if it's okay, I say, I like a vertical scale and I like a written scale, so I'm going to draw a scale for us, and I draw a vertical line, and at the top I put 10 and at the bottom I put 0, and then on the side of 10 I write my paraphrasing of what their best hopes are and what that will look like in their lives. And I say, so if 10 is, and I read it to them what you just said, and 0 is the opposite, I'm going to ask you to put one little horizontal mark across my vertical line that best describes where you are right now. And so they do that, and suppose it's about a third of the way up, I will say, what lets you know you're at 3.5 and not a 2? And they'll of course answer the different question. They'll tell me why they're not higher. And I say, no, I understand why you're not higher. I want to know why not lower. And then they might say something like, well, I got here today, or I got my daughter off to school today. And I can say, wow, how did you do that? And then I might ask, who's the person you're closest to these days? And they might say, my friend or my boyfriend. Would that person agree with that number? And if they say yes, I would say, how would they answer why you're at a 3.5 and not a 1? And they might say some other little behavior. And that tells me something that they're already doing. And no matter how difficult the situation is, that the person is doing some things that work in his or her life.
Beautiful.
We love to do lists and discover over and over again how important and relevant the details are. And we also encounter a lot of people say, oh, what, a list with 10 or 15 or 100 or 50 elements, or always those what else questions. So seeing the relevance of those details and then having people or clients who are not used to that yet. So how do you get them to describe all the details of their ordinary in their extraordinary life? Or extraordinary in their ordinary life?
Sometimes I ask, if I had a 5-minute video of you when you were somehow getting through, no matter how overwhelmed you were last night that you were telling me about, what would I see? And if the person answers in vague terms, I will ask them to tell me more. What room were you in? And where were you sitting? Oh, the sofa on the right side or the left side? And was there sound? Was there music on? Did you have the TV on? And you said you went into the kitchen. You went to the refrigerator or the cabinet? And the little details, I say, help me see it. They really do begin to emerge.
And the beauty is you really bring it to the actual life. You come into their kitchen and they feel like they are in their context, and it's not about talking about something abstract but very concrete in their kitchen, in going to the refrigerator, sitting in front of the TV, getting the sound, so activating the senses, and by that starting to explore details that are relevant in their actual life.
And detail that we may be able to use together to create a solution in another area. If, for example, someone is saying they're having difficulty making a decision, and I remember that they told me 20 minutes ago that they decided to have an apple instead of an orange, that's language that comes from them about a time when indecision wasn't a problem.
Talking about decisions, you wrote this beautiful book, How Do You Know When You Know? How came this idea of this book about?
Well, as a therapist and a life coach, I have the opportunity to talk with many people who struggle with decisions. And as a solution-focused practitioner, I always look for the times when the problem isn't. So I look for times when indecision wasn't a problem. And I discovered that when people talk about a decision they made in the past, they sometimes can describe how they knew, how the decision evolved. When people do that, sometimes that gives them some ideas for future decisions.
So what would you say, Ellen, is specific about your book, combining decision making, and there are a lot of theories and ideas out there, and solution focus?
In my book, I try to use the solution focused perspective to look at decision making. I think about, what does the person really want? Are there ways that it can be both and, not either or? I invite people to look at a near future where the decision is made and they're feeling good about it, or even if the decision isn't yet made, that they're on the road to a decision. I encourage them to think about how they've decided before. How much are they a person who uses intuition, their gut, or reason, logic? And whichever way they lean, how do they manage to bring in the other side? How do they use strengths from other areas of their lives? Obviously, I could keep going. There's so much more.
So all those details of their lives that they've already shown in the past that could be useful, all the details of the things that they want in the future.
Yes.
And how do you know when you know?
It's different for different people, and people have to respect what works for them. Some people make decisions all at once. They suddenly know. For other people, a decision evolves or ripens. One of the wonderful concepts I discovered when I was reading about decision making was the idea of decisions ripening. It's a concept I learned from Jan Muller, a German solution-focused therapist who presented on that at EBTA a few years ago. And when I first read the abstract of his workshop, I thought the word ripen must be a mistranslation from the German, and it only took me an instant to realize that it wasn't, that the image of a decision ripening like fruit fits so much, and I loved that image so much that I even picked a ripening blackberry as the cover art on my book.
That's pretty, yeah, and I realized it yesterday when you mentioned that. So what is it about ripening that made you even put it on the book cover?
I think it's the fact that for so many people, decisions ripen and you can't rush the process. People sometimes, if they're struggling with a decision, people in their world tell them, or we tell ourselves, we'll just decide already. And that's one of those things that sometimes doesn't work well enough. And the opposite of that is take all the time you need. When you are ready, you will know.
I love that, and I think this is such an important part, and I know so many stories years ago when I was not into solution focus, when I told people, yeah, just decide, and it was so easy to tell someone else to just decide. Well, when it came to my own decisions, it was quite different, of course. So I'm really curious if you can give us a bit more details, and you mentioned a few things already, how you invite people in your conversations, be it as a life coach, be it as a therapist, when it comes to making decisions, how you invite them to maybe embrace this process of ripening, or, well, however you would put that or formulate that appropriately.
I actually use a variation of the scaling question that I mentioned before, that sometimes we can create a scale where 10 is that your decision is ripe and 0 is the opposite. And how far up that scale are you? And people can identify that. People can say, I'm at a 7. And I can say, you are 70% of the way toward that ripening. What lets you know that you're at 70 and not 60? And people can tell me. And then I can say, if you stay at 70 a while longer, will that be okay? Or what will 75% of the way look like? And it's actually very similar to a perspective that comes from a different place of the stages of change, pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, and maintenance. And that people make several swings from contemplation down to action, and they slide back like a little child on a beach blanket running toward the waves, and then, oh, the waves are scary, and they run back, and on the fourth attempt they finally touch their toes to the water, and that's so normal. I also invite people to look at what the obstacles are going to be, what might go wrong. And on one level that might not sound very solution focused, but for me it's amazingly solution focused, because when you embrace the obstacle and recognize that it may be there, that's going to help you create a path around it or figure out if that's something that truly could be a deal breaker. And if that's the case, you really want to know that, because that's going to help you decide.
How do you do that? How do you use this obstacle question and make this in a solution focused way?
It's actually a variation of what I do when I ask a future scenario, something that a lot of solution focused practitioners do. When I ask a miracle question, I ask, if a miracle happened while you were sleeping and you woke up tomorrow, what would be different? What else? And I get more detail about that. And then I say, so imagine that the good changes continue and then you slip, as we all do sometimes. How will you get back on track? What else will you do? So I anticipate that slips and getting back on track and problems and obstacles are part of life, and that my miracles are funny miracles where things go wrong and you handle it. So I will ask people, what's the biggest problem it will bring into your life if you do that? And how will you handle that? And what else will you do? And that seamlessly weaves it into the conversation. And if sometimes we have multiple scenarios, if you go down this road, what are the problems that will bring you? And how will you handle them? And if you go down that road, how will you handle them? So either way, they're going to be obstacles and you will manage them. And the other side, or another piece of that, is that there's always wondering about a road not taken, and that that's normal, and that that doesn't mean that your decision was wrong. It's just something that we human beings do, and that worry about something is normal and actually productive. If the worry helps you do the math or figure out what could go wrong, that's going to be a good thing.
What I really like about it is that you invite to look at the problem or at the obstacle, the slips, because they are part of life, and at the same time you don't analyze the problems or the obstacles or the slips, but you analyze how people handle them, how people, well, might grow from them, or at least have them notice that it's part of the life, and that the struggles and coming out of the struggles are part of their everyday life, and that this is a resource they might have, and not only like this stupid obstacle, but that it's part of the journey.
Yes, I can't remember who said this, but somebody said being solution focused doesn't mean you get problem phobic and that you can't say the P word.
That also connects well to stories you told us about your time at the MRI and your influence that Dick Fish had, and you're combining of strategic elements and solution focus.
Yes, I learned strategic therapy first, and Dick Fish was one of my main mentors, and I learned from him that there was some research that said that when the problem was not clear, therapy was less likely to go well, and that clarifying the problem, the area for change, really had some value. And he would ask people, in what way is this a problem in your life? And from where I sit now, looking back, it doesn't feel all that different from asking, what are your best hopes? It reminds me of the analogy that we are like Uber, that until the person types in a destination, the app doesn't start running. And people start by talking about a problem, and that sometimes that leads to where you want to go. The other thing in the strategic world is the idea that sometimes what we human beings do in our best attempt to solve a problem ends up not working, and you have to invite people to do something different. The best example I can think of with that is that if someone is depressed, people say to them, cheer up. Sometimes that works. But when it doesn't work well enough, it's far more elegant to come in with an approach like, your feelings make sense? That really sucks? And you're doing that not, at least for me, not as some manipulative strategy that if I'm doing it behind your back and being paradoxical, you'll disagree with me, but as my belief in existential realities, that sometimes pain is there, and that it's okay, and doing things in the presence of that is huge. Can I tell you my story of how I moved to solution focused and how I combined the approaches?
I would love to hear that. Thank you.
So in my reading and study of the strategic work, I eventually came to some of Steve DeShazer's books, and I loved the idea of the solution focused perspective. And at the same time, I really valued some of the things from the strategic world, and I struggled with, can you use both? And one of those light bulb moments happened for me at the break of some conference. It obviously wasn't SFBTA because that didn't exist then. When I was talking about my dilemma with John Walter, a solution-focused therapist, and he said, well, what if using both didn't have to be a problem? And that was a beautiful example for me of both and rather than either or. And that led me to develop what I was then asked to write and present about, called the strategic solution-focused approach, that combines clarifying the problem with elaborating the solution and amplifying what works with interrupting what doesn't work.
When we had dinner the other night, you explained how this question to ask for the problems of people comes in with solution focus for you, and also Dick Fish's perspective on that. So could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
It's sort of what I was saying a few minutes ago, that he would ask, in what way is this a problem? And for me, it's just a seamless step from that to say, well, what do you want instead? Or when that isn't a problem anymore, what will that look like? And it goes with the fact that people sometimes, especially in a therapy practice, will start with the problem. And in the spirit of using the client's language and starting where the client is, if the person says, I'm depressed or I'm struggling with my marriage, it almost seems disrespectful not to honor that and to say, tell me more about that. In what way is that a problem? And then to move to what they want instead. Although I must say that in practice these days, I am more likely to begin a session by asking, what are your best hopes from coming to talk?
Mm-hmm. How did that change, or how does that come?
I think it ripened.
Oh. Beautiful.
And maybe it doesn't have to be either or.
It's both and.
It's both and also here. What other things have changed and have you sustained?
I think a piece that I have kept from the strategic perspective is looking at when common sense first response attempted solutions don't work well enough, like in decision making. If a person is saying, I should just know, I shouldn't have any wondering, an opposite of that might be, of course you will wonder. Of course you'll wonder what life would be like had you gone elsewhere. And actually, Steve DeShazer once said, if you do A, you'll always wonder what life would have been like had you done B, and vice versa.
You'll always wonder if life would have gone elsewhere. So what else do you do with people?
Sometimes no matter how someone makes a decision, it doesn't go well or it doesn't go as one hoped. And regret is a normal emotion like any other. And when it's there, one embraces it and we learn from our mistakes and we make a next decision and a next one, and nothing is for nothing.
Yeah, and to embrace that might be very helpful in a process of ripening decision, making decision, and maybe redeciding decisions.
Yes, and I think that embracing that and acknowledging it for me is very consistent with a solution-focused perspective of allowing the emotions to be there and then going on and doing what you need to do and making a next decision that you're going to feel proud of.
That reminds me of what Gail Miller once said, and said, there is no outcome, there's only process.
Yes.
And a lot of people ask us, well, what if it, for example, a solution-focused question, or what if it, decision doesn't work? And if you have this process view, there is no, it doesn't work. It's just, you do something, there is something happening, and you are constantly doing, redeciding, redoing. So in constant flow of a process.
Yes, we adjust. It's like when we're driving our car, you steer a little far to the right, you come back to center, you go the other way, you come back to center. We do that all the time in decisions big and small.
And you would never ask, well, what if steering doesn't work?
So, yes.
Well, of course, yes. There could be steering doesn't work, but a normal way steering it does work and you need to adjust, and you're always adjusting in your life.
And when steering doesn't work, then we make the decision to take the vehicle to the shop. Yeah. And that's a good decision.
Yes. So, Ellen, from our conversation and also from your experience as a solution-focused practitioner, if there is one or two things that you would love people to take away, to remember from our conversation, that you would like to give them?
I would say that when you're facing a decision, large or small, think about what you really want and ways it can be both and, not either or. Tap into your strengths and remember how you've decided before. More than you realize, you know a great deal about how you know. Let your decision evolve and ripen. Don't be afraid to anticipate obstacles and use your strengths to create paths around them. And that's probably more than one thing. But it's to use any of that that works and resonates for you.
Wow, what a beautiful thing to do. And it could well be the challenge of the week or something else. So what's the challenge of the week for today?
I would say that when you hit a rough patch or face a lot of stress, just keep going. Do those simple things that you already know how to do. Those things that on one level are ordinary and on another level are extraordinary. And you might reflect on, imagine it's tonight, you're looking back on how you handled it and you're really feeling proud of the good decisions you made. What will you be remembering that you did?
I'm looking forward to do this challenge. Thank you very much, Ellen.
Thank you, both of you.
Thank you for the challenge. Thank you for having us here. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we are curious, of course, how the challenge of the week worked for you. So please let us know and comment in the comment field on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast. And then go to episode number 45.
And we will now head towards Los Angeles, and there are a lot of decisions to make on our way, and it's a perfect day to do what we already know how to do and then to reflect in the evening and see what worked well there. So thank you very much.
And one decision we already took today when we came here was not to decide where to go before we go back to the RV. So we are curious. We know we will head towards LA, but we don't know yet where we will stay tonight, and we are looking forward to explore that now. Before we do that, we just enjoy one more view to the ocean together with Ellen, and thank you very much again, and see you next week.
Thank you, and goodbye.
This was the Simply Focused Podcast with Alfie Cherney and Dominic Odette, your podcast for a life in joy and ease. Do you like the Simply Focus podcast? Well, help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast an excellent rating on iTunes and Google Play and other platforms. Then don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And share your thoughts and inspirations with others by commenting at www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast. Then go to this episode. This was the Simply Focus podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Odette.